Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk distribution made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. What are the specific risks associated with this investment? What is the maximum I could lose? Sometimes it's true that retirement portfolios have higher risk built into them because of their mix of stocks and funds, and the investor doesn't even know. One way to find the answer is to use our risk analysis tool on investtalk.com. That's the first step. It's free to use. Try it on investtalk.com. Just look for the free risk analysis tool. End of commercial. And now today's InvestTalk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to InvestTalk. It is Thursday, May 19th, 2016. And I do really appreciate you being with us. The new residential construction report, known as a housing starts report on Wall Street, is a monthly report issued by the U.S. Census Bureau jointly with the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUD. The data comes from surveys of home builders nationwide. Remember, we're talking about the housing starts report. Three different metrics are provided in this housing starts report: housing starts, building permits, and housing completions. A housing start is defined as beginning the foundation of the home itself. Building permits are counted as when they are granted. So what does the numbers tell us? They're out this week. What do they tell us? What does it help you with? Why would you need to know that? Well, I think it's very important, because housing is very important to most Americans, because many Americans buy a house, own a house, and when you buy a house or own a house, you have to fix it up. So it generates economic activity, a lot of it. So therefore, it's important. It's very important. Now, the housing reports for April was published yesterday, or day before yesterday. I don't remember exactly. And I reported this in my market commentary, which I write every Monday, Wednesday, Friday. You can on investtalk.com. There were a total of 1.172 million new homes under construction. That was up from 1.09 million. So there's about 100,000 more units for the month. Starts. Foundations were poured. And that was a bit better than expectations. I expected 1.12 million. So it was 1.17 million. The building permits, which is a leading economic indicator part of the housing report. The housing report is not a leading economic indicator, but the building permits inside it are. And they were at 1.16 million, up from 1.07 million the month before. So it was pretty good. The numbers were pretty good, pretty decent, especially in light of the pretty mildly growing economy we have. And it probably is a comment on the lower mortgage interest rates we've had recently. Remember, the Fed raised rates in December and mortgage rates fell. Isn't that funny? And that's not necessarily wrong, by the way. Not necessarily, because the Fed raised the rates so small, there's still room for their rates to fall. And of course, now we're all worried about the rates going up next month. So houses are a store of wealth. We all know that. And a good housing report is always good for the economy. Remember, the economy is driven by the consumer. Consumer buying houses, that's a pretty big ticket item. They want to spend money. That means they're confident. Now, do you have questions about real estate? We hope you'll bring your questions or comments to us this hour. Before we go any further, let's check in now on our 24-hour listen line, 888-99-CHART. Remember, it's our anytime number.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Pete from Vegas. Listen to the show on iTunes. Love the show. Question I have is on mutual funds. I never, ever, ever, ever buy anything that has a load, any kind of commission that it would be taken out. I have a question on 12b-1. Like, how much does it come down to? You know, if I buy $10,000 worth of mutual funds, you know, does it ding me for a couple of dollars, $50, $100? In any case, let me know what it is. Basically, the question again is, how much is the 12b-1? How much does it actually cost me? And does it compare anything to like a 4, 5, 5.75% load? Thanks again. Listening to the show to hear it. Take care. Bye, guys.
What he is describing is the different ways that mutual funds pay people for bringing them the business, bringing the mutual fund the business. And you can get a front-end load of 4, 5, 6, 7%. That means that you give $100,000, they take $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 off the top and pay the broker who brought them the mutual, who brought them the client who bought the mutual fund. Comes right out of the client's money. Then there's the back-end load, which is 1% a year for 5 years. That's a B shares. A shares are the upfront, B shares the behind. And then there's C shares, different kinds of shares. He's also, but there's another kind of fee called 12B1 fees. And that's what the mutual fund charges or can charge the client, meaning the people who buy the fund, higher fees. Remember, every mutual fund has a fee built into it, paid annually all the time. Okay. But they're also going to add on to that what's called a 12B1 fee, which is a marketing cost, which is a cost they pass along to the broker who brings them the client again to buy the fund. And that 12B1 fee can vary, 0.5%, 0.25%, to 1% a year on the back end. So it can be quite expensive. Don't think it's cheap. It's not necessarily cheap. It's just another way, another something else to call it besides a commission or a load. They call it a 12B1 fee because it's allowed under the law, 12B1. So don't be fooled. 12B1 fees are just as bad. Why don't we go ahead and take a text question, okay? You know, text question, you can ask a text question, 888-99-CHART. Hi guys, does a negative PE ratio mean the company is not making money, or can a company be profitable with a negative PE? I'm asking because you have said on the show you don't buy companies that don't make money, but ABX has a negative PE. ABX is a gold play. It's a gold mining company, in case anybody was interested. And it does not have a negative PE. Barrick Gold Corporation, the PE is 50. They're going to make 55 cents this year, an $18 stock, and they'll make 70 cents next year. Okay, so they don't have negative PE. They're a negative PE, there is no such thing. Because PE is price divided by their earnings. How can you have price divided by earnings if there's no earnings? You have to have earnings to divide into the price. Right? So there's no such thing as a negative PE. Now, you might be confusing that with a shrinkage of the E. So the E is falling. But to go negative means they don't make any money. That's what that means. Okay. Good question, though. Appreciate it. Why do people invest in hedge funds? That's our main talking point today. Hedge funds. They've been having a really bad time. Federal tightening. Federal Reserve tightening. What are we're looking at a June meeting, and they've been hinting all week that they're going to tighten. That's one of the reasons why the market's down. We'll talk about that. We've talked about it a little bit. I want to talk about it more. 401k, the inventor he really wasn't the inventor, but the guy who discovered the little quirk in the 401k law, who then got it passed the IRS, says he created a monster. What's he talking about? Why the U.S. dollar might get stronger this year. U.S. dollar might get stronger this year. Now remember, it was strong. It was up last year, and fairly strong. But ever since the Fed raised the rate in December by a quarter point, the dollar's gotten weaker. That's not logical, by the way. You would think that it would get stronger if interest rates were rising, because it would attract more people to our dollar to buy U.S. Treasuries and other instruments are paying higher interest rates than what they can get in their home country. So you would think that would drive the dollar up, but it didn't. But why would the dollar get stronger this year? It's got some reasons for that. But first, let's take a look at the market. What happened to the market today? The Dow is down 91, the NASDAQ down 27, and the S&P down 8. It was a lot worse than that during the day. So you can say that it got better during the day. It was still a down day, don't get me wrong there, but it was much worse during the intraday part So, but still down. We're down, what, 2 weeks in a row now? That's what the market's been doing. And as they talk up a possible interest rate hike, the market's not liking it. Not liking it at all. I'm glad you're spending this hour with me today. I appreciate it. I see too many investors who might have avoided trouble and losses if they had just asked basic questions from the start. So don't hesitate to call. Rather than guess or assume, ask your question. I welcome it. 888-99-CHART.
Hey guys, this is Josh from South Carolina. I had a question for you guys. In the instance of a rate hike by the Fed, I was looking at a couple of community banks instead of a big national bank. I know you guys advocate staying away from big banks. Looking at UCBI, United Community Banks, and also EVER, E-V-E-R is a symbol for EVER, UCBI for United Community Banks. See what you guys thought about either one of those. Thank you.
Let's look at UCBI, headquarters out of Blairsville, Georgia, a holding company for United Community Bank operations via 159 offices in Georgia, North Carolina, and Tennessee. It's a $1.39 billion company, pays a 1.4% dividend, a small dividend. And it looks pretty darn good because earnings are going to go up 13% this year, then 11% next year. And that means it's going to make $1.59 a share, and it's a $19.44 stock. And sales are accelerating, not shrinking, on a quarter-to-quarter basis. I kind of like it. I think it looks like a pretty good company. And if the Fed does raise interest rates, everybody, that's a benefit to the banks, not a detriment. You know, some people would assume because they're raising rates, then the banks raise those rates, and then they'll have less business. When in actuality, the banks need more spread. They want a better spread. Remember that, you know, when people put money in the bank, they earn interest. When they don't earn interest, they take it out of the bank, and that's what's been happening. So banks don't have the money that they want or need or could use to make loans. Now, they could borrow the money from the Fed. They can do that. But also, one of their big asset gathering sector of their business is depositors. Well, depositors are not very happy in recent years. So raising interest rates means they can pay a bit more CD rates, a bit more savings rates. So I think it's a net gain for the banks. So I like this bank, UCBI, United Communities Bank. Looks pretty good. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278, hedge funds. Okay, let me state right out that you should never buy a hedge fund. But why do people invest in hedge funds? Because they're trying to make a killing in the market. Hedge funds leverage, they take huge risks, they take very narrow positions, but a big, huge position, narrow meaning they might buy just a couple, three stocks or do something really flamboyant with the money. I mean, they can do really exotic things, and the hope is they'll make a killing. And they charge a lot of money for it. They charge 2% plus 20% of the profits. And people put money in them like you couldn't believe. Many times hedge funds minimum is $1 million. But their 5-year average return for a hedge fund is like 3% a year. So it's not like they're making a killing, much less in the market. So stay away from them. All they do is make rich the people who are running the hedge funds. You don't need them. You can read about them in my article that's on my website if you want. I just don't think it's a wise idea for the average person. This is Invest Talk. It doesn't matter if you are a beginner or have been investing for many years. It's never too early or too late to start asking questions. After all, it's your money at stake, isn't it? Use your phone right now. If you have a question or comment, 888-99-CHART. Let's talk to Huey in San Jose. How you doing, Huey?
Hi, how are you?
I'm good.
Hello?
Yes.
Okay. So I have a question. I would like to give me some comments about a stock. It just IPO last year. The stock name is Ace Cube Square.
Okay,
it's symbol. It's a small business payment.
Yes.
SQ.
SQ is a symbol. Square Inc. That's the one that has a little square, little white cubey thing you can plug into your iPad or your iPhone, and you can slide a credit card through it, and it charges the credit card to whatever it is. So it's a very mobile payment system is what it is.
Yeah.
And I actually use it. So I'm pretty familiar with Square. They IPO'd at $9 a share, but the first trade was at $11 a share. So you couldn't buy it at $9 unless you got it at the IPO price, which most average people don't get it. And today it's at $9.60. It got as high as $15.50, then fell. And it's very common, Huey, for IPO stocks to fall hard about 6 months after they're issued. The reason being is the insiders can start selling. They have to. The insiders have to hold the stock for about 6 months, and then get to sell, and that's the way they can realize some profits and make some money off the IPO that they did. So this stock did nothing different, but then fall because there was a lot of sellers on the IPO, to realize their money. Is it a good company? Well, they've lost money every year, and they're going to lose money this year, but next year they're going to make 10 cents a share. So they're going to earn 10 cents a share next year while sales are growing about 50% or more per quarter. So it's still growing very, very fast, and they're finally going to make some profits next year. And now the question is the stock worth more than $9.60? And I would say, yeah, it probably is, because the growth rate, if they keep that up, this stock is worth more. It's worth probably closer to $14 or so, in that range. That's what I think it's worth. So, yeah.
Okay. So, what about its long-term prospective? What do you think about this stock?
Well, they're going
to hold it?
I don't think it's a very strong long-term prospect, because they're going to have a lot of competition coming in. Apple is with their Apple Pay system, and every credit card company, Visa, MasterCard, all of them, Discovery, American Express, they're all going to attack this business model. So they're going to, it's going to be a tough haul for them to survive all that competition. So long term, Huey, I don't have a lot of hope for them. I really don't.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. That's SQ, that's Square Inc. Hopefully I'm wrong. I like young companies. I hope they make it. It's a $3 billion company right now. But, they're not making enough money to, they're making about $1 billion, $1.2 billion a year in sales. So, Let's pick up one of the next text questions that came in before today's program. Hi, Steve. I'm wondering what your opinion is on X-ray. It seems like the downturn has been broken. Good time to get in, or do I stay away from them altogether? Also, I love your economic and market forecasts. I recently became an insider and know I will really benefit from your forecasts and portfolio weighting recommendations. Thank you very much. Well, I appreciate it. You can become an insider for free, and we all provide lots of information there. X-ray, it's kind of an interesting X-R-A-Y is a company that develops broad range dental supplies and products, including dental consumable, laboratory, and specialty products. So I kind of like the business, because it's not one that's going to go away. It's not a cyclical business. It's a $14 billion company, so it's quite a big company. They've made money all the time. They're going to make $2.75 this year per share. That's 5% more than last year. $3.09 next year. That's 12% more. Not a lot of debt. Sales growth is the problem area, even though the most recent quarter they grew 18%. But for 5 or 6 quarters in a row before that, they were shrinking 7 to 10% per quarter. So they've turned it around. They've turned the sales around. And earnings are rising. So that's a pretty good sign. It's a $60 stock, though. So based on next year's earnings, it's going to be a 20 PE. That's not cheap. It's not cheap. So It's a kind of stock that, yeah, I don't have a problem owning it. It doesn't pay much in a dividend, 0.5%. But I would buy it on a pullback. Earlier, late last year, it was hovering around $51, $52. And if you're going to, it's at $60 now, I'd wait. There should be a pullback giving the opportunity to get into it. We're glad you're with us today for Invest Talk. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. If you'd like to schedule a portfolio checkup with me, I'll be in San Jose next week on the 25th. That's Wednesday, 25th. I'm also scheduling visits to on Skype or the telephone on May 31st. To get in on the schedule, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab.
Thank you for subscribing to our podcast. Shopping for mutual funds? How has this fund performed over the long run? Where can I get an independent evaluation of this fund? Good questions to ask Steve. 888-99-CHART is how to get your question heard and answered on Invest Talk. Continue now with this Thursday, May 19th, Invest Talk. Financial professionals know that an educated client is an asset, not a liability. Even if you work with a financial pro, more knowledge is better than less. We're open to your question right now, 888-99-CHART, anytime, 24 hours a day.
This is Adam Thomas from Fort Wayne, Indiana. Great show, guys. I appreciate all the effort and time you put into this show. I wanted to know if you had any comments on the pro or con side to writing covered calls. I don't hear much about it discussed and just wanted your opinion. Thank you.
We don't talk about options very much because we don't participate in that part of the market. But there's absolutely nothing wrong with writing covered calls. And what that means is they're going to collect, they own a stock and they want to make some money off of just owning the stock, not from the price movement of the stock, but offering to people in the cover in an instrument called covered calls for people to buy their stock if it happens to hit a certain strike price. And because they're offering to do that, they get a premium, maybe 25 cents or 50 cents a share, to offer that option. Okay, to buy that stock from them or for them to put the stock to, there's different ways to do it. I don't want to get too in-depth into the explanation here, simply because I'm not an expert on it and I don't want to talk about something I'm not an expert on, at least, you know, in-depth. But it is a way, if you own a big blue chip stock, you've owned it forever and you plan never on selling it, which some people do, you can write cover calls on it and try to make a little extra money. The best way to do that is if it's a stock that doesn't move very much, up or down. But again, if that's the case, you don't get very much premium for it either. So there's nothing wrong with it. It's a strategy to make money on stocks you own in addition to either dividends or price appreciation. Okay? 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. The Fed is going to meet again in June. Okay, in December of last year, they raised the rates by a quarter point. And then their next meeting, they did nothing. And try to remember, put yourself back in December. They were threatening to raise the rates four times or so, up a 1% by the end of this year. The market immediately tanked in January, worst January ever. And they backed off of that. So they made no change in the next rate meeting. And the next meeting here come up in June. They've been hinting all week that raising the rates is pretty much on the table. They're ready to do it. And, of course, the stock market doesn't like it and started to fall again. Will it react, it meaning the stock market, react like it did in December? You know, from the rate raise in December and 10% fall in January? Will it do that? Probably not, because it's already, everybody knows that maybe they're going to raise rates. even though they kind of suspected they were due in December. But usually the second time it happens, the reaction is not as bad. It could be. I don't know that. But are they really, really going to raise the rates? Because the information coming out on the economic situation here in the United States is decent. It's not great. It's not bad. It's decent. But I have a feeling it's going to turn on the jobs report for May, which we will get in the first part of June. The Fed will see that before we do. I think that's really going to be, if it's a bad jobs report, I can see them postponing it. If it's a good jobs report, I think rates are going up. One of the reasons why I think it's going up, because they really would like to get the rates higher, and there's another meeting in the middle of summer, there's another one in like December, and we got the presidential election going on, and they don't want to be seen as influenced in any way, shape, or form. So if they're going to raise the rates, they'd rather do it sooner, June, than later. But December would be okay because it'd be after the election, and then they can't be accused. So it's now or December. I don't think they really want to raise it while the campaigning for presidents goes on. So we'll see. I think that's another reason why they might raise it now. Let's go to Tim in San Jose. How you doing, Tim?
Hi, how you doing?
Thanks
for taking my call.
Thank you.
I want to ask you about one. What do you think of the company?
Micron Technology?
Uh-huh.
They've been having a hard time. The stock really took a dive. It's now at $10 a share. But they're going to make 14 cents this year after making a lot more money last year, $2.65. But next year, they're going to make 86 cents, meaning that the PE is around 12 or so. So that's a pretty reasonable price. And Micron Technology manufactures DRAM and flash memory, image sensors, and computers and servers and consumer electronics stuff. It's a $10 billion company at a $10 a share stock. So it's pretty big size company. I think that, and it's been flopping at the bottom here around $10, $10 to $11 for months. If they survive and start growing, which it looks like they might, I think this would be a bargain price. But I probably would wait for it to bounce up a little bit to get maybe get above $11 a share before. And I know that's 10% rise, but man, I would wait till it rises before I'd be a buyer of this stock. But I do think the company's going to survive, and I think that they will thrive. And you really want to know what their plan is to grow their sales and profits, because you know their sales have been tanking the last four quarters. So you want to find out what they plan to do to return to growth of sales. But I kind of like it. It's cheap enough. This might want to have an out, stop out if you do buy it. Tim, appreciate the call. It's MU is a symbol, Micron Technologies. Time for Invest Talk 101. We haven't done one of those in a while. What's the difference between an ETF and a mutual fund? And what's the difference between an ETF index and a mutual fund index fund? And there is a difference. Okay, starting with funds or index mutual funds, remember their portfolios, they mimic a performance of an index like the S&P 500, the Dow, the NASDAQ. That's what an index fund does. Now, you can do it by buying a mutual fund that tracks the index. Now, a mutual fund always has a manager in it. And there's always a cost to own a mutual fund. There is an internal fee. But there is also with an ETF. They have internal fees too. So why buy an ETF versus, let's say you wanted an S&P 500 index fund. Would you buy a mutual fund or you buy an ETF? What would be better? Well, ETFs, you can buy intraday, during the day, just like a stock. Whereas a mutual fund, you always get priced at the end of the day. You put your order in, and at the end of the day, the price of that index fund, that's what you get. Whereas an ETF, it floats during the day, and you can buy and sell it intraday if you want to. An index ETF normally is less expensive than an index mutual fund. At least they have been. Okay? There's no minimums for ETFs. You can buy one share, 100 shares, 1,000 shares. Well, many mutual funds have minimums, $2,500 to buy a mutual fund. So those are some of the differences. So is one better than the other? I prefer the ETFs, personally. I think they're cheaper, and I kind of like them. But there's a cost for a trading cost in an ETF. It's just like buying a stock. Many mutual funds, there's no cost. ETFs, though, you can sell whenever you want to, where mutual funds, many times, they have a holding period. Pros and cons, everybody, pros and cons. I just like the cons, the pros better than the cons for ETFs. You can see more about this comparison on businessinsider.com. Is there a money topic you want me to talk about? Be happy to do it. Send me a note. Click on Contact Steve on investtalk.com or click or check in now at 888-99-CHART.
Here's a question to ask before all others. Does this investment match my investment goals? Why is this investment appropriate for me? Steve offers to help a limited number of our listeners answer that question more intelligently. Steve will be in San Jose May 25th for individual one-hour informal meetings portfolio reviews. If you're out of reach of our California offices, you can meet with Steve via Skype and telephone on May 31st. To schedule your time, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab.
888-99-CHART. Let's talk to Phil in Oakland. How you doing, Phil?
I'm doing well, thank you. This is actually something I'd like you to talk about, if you would, please.
Sure.
And that is global or international REITs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, everybody, we have to explain, make sure everybody knows what a REIT is. It's a real estate investment trust. And to become a real estate investment trust traded on our exchange, you have to pay out 90% of your earnings in the form of a dividend to the shareholders. 90% of earnings in the form of a dividend to the shareholders. Then you qualify for a REIT. And as a REIT, you do not have to pay corporate income tax. Now, Phil is asking, well, what about a global international REIT? Is that a good thing, bad thing, what? Phil, they're just as good or bad as our own domestic REITs. You have to look at their holdings. You have to look at their earnings per share, their cash flow, their funds flow from operations, FFO, they call it. FFO, funds flow from operations. Funds from operations. So you have to look at that. And it's just like any other REIT. What kind of, where are they getting their money? Do they buy office buildings and rent them out? Do they sell mortgages? How do they make their money? So there's nothing wrong with a global or international REITs. They're fine. Just got to look inside them, make sure that's something you want to own. Appreciate the call,
well,
Phil.
Steve.
Yeah.
Steve,
go ahead.
What I've found in talking to people like yourself, many have said it's not so much the country, it's the sector in the country. In other words, like, are they, as you just pointed out, are they possibly commercial buildings or, you know, what kind of properties, or are they holding mortgages? So I wonder if you have any tips or suggestions as to what kind of sectors in developing or emerging countries.
Well, I have to take a little bit of exception about the country. What if you're in a country that has a very weak legal system? What if you have a country that has a very, very feeble political system? Like, what if you bought a REIT in Venezuela about 8-10 years ago before, when they were more free market society, and now they're more of a socialist society, and then what happened is they nationalized oil, they nationalized a bunch of stuff, and you know, all you people who thought you owned things, you didn't own them. So there is an element, Phil, of foreign stability that you're looking for. You bought one in Canada, I would not have a problem with that at all. You bought England, I wouldn't. Most of the countries in Europe, I wouldn't. If you're talking about Thailand, I'd be a little bit more worried, right? So there is that element of political risk out there. Other than that, What sectors will work really well? That's difficult to know. It really is. And I can't tell you that I favor any sectors right now because interest rates are so very low around the world. And I'm thinking, you know, REITs are going to have a heck of a time when interest rates start to rise, but maybe they won't rise for 5 years, you know, maybe they won't. Mm. So, but as soon as they start rising, REITs tend not to do well in a rising interest rate environment. Okay?
Hmm, interesting.
Phil, appreciate the call. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. The 401k inventor, well, sort of inventor, says he created a monster. This is Ted Bennin. Many years ago, 1982, he came across a small part of the law which allowed for 401ks, but no one was using it. No one was even paying attention to it. One of the reasons why is you had to get the blessing of the IRS as you put money from your 401k, because it really wasn't designed initially the way we use it. It was designed to not take income, but not necessarily to save money with that income. So anyways, now from zero from 1982 to $3 trillion. So why does he say that he might have created a monster? His biggest complaint is that they're very complex and bloated with fees, benefiting mostly the financial community, not the participants. Excuse me. And there is some truth in this, and that's one of the reasons why the Department of Labor just recently changed the law so that, you know, plan sponsors and other people, brokers and dealers and all financial people that offer products to clients have to have now their best interests in heart. Before, they only had to meet what was called a suitability standard. Well, now they can't, that's not good enough. You have to put the client first, which to me should have been done all along, but that's not how it was done. Registered investment advisors such as I, who buy the exact same thing for his clients as he does for himself and the same price, I've always put my clients first. But now, so this law doesn't affect me at all. But in the 401k realm, you didn't have to do that. It was only suitable stuff. So, yeah, you just have to change the law to make it more client-friendly. And that's what they're moving toward. You're listening to Invest Talk. I'm registered investment advisor Steve Peasley. If you still have a question, we still have time. 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART. It's our anytime number. Let's start with this segment with a text message. Hello, Steve. Why does the interest rate increase by the Fed impact the stock market? Okay. There's two basically broad reasons that impacts. Number one is pretty basic, okay? If you had a pile of cash sitting there, would you rather buy stocks with that money or would you rather buy bonds with that money? Okay, well, you would then say, well, how much money, what's the dividend yield? What's the yield of those bonds? And how much money can I make on those stocks? Your thinking process would be, how much money can I make on stock versus how much money I can make on bonds? Well, if the Federal Reserve increases interest rates, that means there's more bonds are going to be issued at higher and higher yields. And the higher the yield is, if the yield was 2%, it doesn't look so good. What if the bond would, 2% a year, what if the bond would pay you 5% a year? Would you rather have that than stocks? Think about it. It's a competition of your dollars for an investment vehicle, stocks versus bonds. The higher the interest rates, the more they are attracted to investors to bonds versus stocks. Money comes out of stocks, goes into bonds, the market goes down. That's one broad reason. The other one is, when the Fed raises the rates, The assumption is in history, even though today it might be just because they're so very low, they got to get them up. But in history, the assumption is they're trying to slow the economy. And they continue to raise the rates until the economy slows. Well, if the economy slows, investors don't like that because that will slow down or reduce the profits corporations make or push us into a recession, which also will reduce. There's the fear of that happening that pulls money. So let's get out of the stock market before that happens. Pull stock prices down. See, that's why. It's where the money is going to leave and for what reasons. Why would the money leave the stock market? Well, there might be something more attractive. Or we're fearful that the Fed is trying to slow the economy and slow profits for corporations. So I don't want to own companies right now. That's the two basic broad brush reasons. Good question. Very good question. Why the dollar might get stronger this year? Remember, the dollar rose 13% or so last year and then started to fall right in January. It's fallen a little bit this year. But why would it get stronger this year? Well, there's certain things that can cause the dollar to get strong. How about the Brexit? Britain is voting to leave or stay in the EU next month. That gives a lot of uncertainty in the EU, does it not? So do you want to buy, would you rather own British pounds? Or because if they leave, that's what they'll be. But if they leave and that's what they're going to be, what is going to happen to the euro? Well, there's some uncertainty there, right? So our dollar might go up. How about Greece and other southern EU nations who are deeply in debt and struggling to get out? Our dollar looks a lot more attractive than most of those European countries. So the euro might get weaker compared to the dollar. China, they may even devaluate their currency. They're struggling too to try to keep growth going. They have huge debt issues. Japan. Now Japan recently, in the recent quarter, had a surprise growth of, I think it was like 1.7%. But they've had several quarters before that, they were in recession. So would you buy yen versus dollars? What would be stronger? So these are the reasons why the dollar could get stronger this year. Not because we're doing all that great in our economy, more so that other countries are doing worse, a lot worse. Remember, the currency, it's a relationship between the currencies, between our dollar and other currencies. It's the relationship that makes it stronger or weak. But what supports currencies? The strength or weakness of your economy. That's what supports it. Okay. Our time is up. There's a new way to get in touch with us between programs. You have a question or a comment, just text us. You can text your message to 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278, and we'll answer your question on InvestTalk or by text reply if you wish. We are now text accessible. 888-99-CHART. I'm Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and everybody at KPP, I want to thank you for listening today. And of course, we could do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.